and another meadow. It was a lifetime ago, but I saw her again. She spun at her wheel, her head angled to the side.
"So you think you have the gift?"
"Who told you that?"
"The stories. They travel."
Her wheel turned. Word. The valley waited, watched, its heartbeat a murmur on the breeze. The truth was here, somewhere. I walked on. The pluck of a string. And another. Music. I spun, looking back from where I had come. The valley was empty, but I heard the mournful strum of the zitares, my mother's song floating. And then when I looked back to where I'd been heading, I saw something else. All ways belong to the world. What is magic but what we don't yet understand? A girl knelt on the rim of a wide bluff above me. There. The word fluttered in my belly. Familiar. A word that had pushed and prodded me toward the maps, and then this valley. Her eyes met mine. "It was you," I whispered. She nodded, but said nothing. She kissed her fingers, and I heard the holy text braiding with the air. And Morrigan raised her voice to the heavens, kissing two fingers, one for the lost and one for those yet to come, for the winnowing was not over. The song that had filled the valley only seconds ago was now hers, winding, lengthening, beckoning. I stumbled up the steep trail to the bluff, but by the time I got to where she had knelt, she was gone. The bluff jutted out, and the long valley was in my view in both directions, as still and silent as ever, except for her voice. I dropped to the ground, kneeling, feeling the warmth of where she had been, feeling her desperation from centuries ago, feeling it now. The winnowing was not over. Time circles, repeats. And the desperate prayers she had lifted to the gods so long ago became my own.
"Leah," Rafe called. "What are you doing up there?"
I turned to see Rafe and Caden on their horses. They'd brought my horse along, too. I got back to my feet and took one last look at the bluff, the hills, and the ruins that towered over me. "Preparing," I answered, and I walked down the trail to meet them. When we got back to camp, we sent scouts riding the swiftest horses to lookouts past the valley's eastern mouth to watch for the approaching army. The rest of us began our work in earnest. Rafe and Caden had mapped out the terrain and trails that could support charging brigades of soldiers. There were 7 on one side of the hills and 4 on the other. Ruins would hide them from view until we were ready. The entrance to the valley was 3 miles wide, but it quickly narrowed. The field marshal, Howland, Marquez, and the other officers would lead the charges when signaled. Our timing had to be perfect. One division, mine, would be held out as bait and decoy. Our drumbeats and our battle chants would draw them toward us. The high grass of the valley would help hide some of our defenses. Deadly rows of pikes were constructed and hidden. Nets were positioned for launch. Siege crossbows were strategically placed, though that was the greatest unknown, where and when the Brezelots would be used. But I was sure his death steeds and his child soldiers would be his first line of attack. The Komazar would see my few thousand troops blocking his path at the end of the valley and assume the rest of my army lay behind me. Sending in his charging animals would clear the path quickly. We worked without stopping and waited. Waited for the Komazar. Waited for Rafe's troops. Neither came, and nerves grew raw. I said remembrances morning and night. I spoke to the troops, bolstered them, made promises to them and to myself. Bertie, Pauline, and Gwyneth worked with the camp cooks to keep everyone fed and spirits up, at which they excelled. I pulled Natia aside privately and walked with her into the valley. "Look there," I said, pointing into the valley. "What do you see?"
"I see a battleground."
I looked into the same valley, but I saw purple Carvacci and ribbons twirling in the wind. I saw Dihara spinning at her wheel, and Venda singing from a wall. I saw Morrigan praying from a bluff, and Astor sitting wide-eyed in a tent listening to a story. A greater story. I saw a world past that didn't want us to give up. I looked back at Natia. I didn't want her to give up on the world she had known either. "One day you'll pass through here again, and you will see more," I promised. "Until then, I have a job for you. It's more important than anything else we will do, and for it, you will not need a sword."
Chapter 85, Caden.
We sat in the tent, tired, aching, but still planning. Leah rubbed her eyes. Rafe rubbed his knuckles. The field marshal sat forward with his chin cradled in his hands. Tomorrow the brigades would be put into place. We had been holding off, hoping Dalbrecht's troops would arrive, but we couldn't wait any longer. What little we had needed to be positioned. Our divisions would be outnumbered more than 4-1. With no sign of the Komisar or Dalbrecht, Perry suggested we might want to consider retreating to Sitica. To Howland's credit, as much as he grumbled and complained, he backed Leah up, saying this was no time for retreat. We had a miserable chance of victory here, and none back in Sitica. I saw the weight of it in Leah's eyes. I felt the worry twist in my own gut, and I didn't like that Pauline was here. She had a baby back at the Citadel. "That is exactly why I am here," she had told me. Gwyneth breezed in with a frown and a frustrated hand on her hip. "There's a big ugly brute out there demanding to see Leah." "A soldier?" I asked. She shrugged. "He's outfitted to kill something. Something big." "He'll have to wait," Leah said. "That's what I told him, but he's not giving up. He keeps yammering for Queen Jezalia." Howland's brows shot up. "Queen Jezalia?" "That's right," she answered, "and he's got a frightening little ruffian with him. I wouldn't..." I watched Leah's face brighten. At the same time, Rafe's darkened. "Queen?" Howland said again. Leah jumped from her seat and flew from the tent. I followed her. She was already hugging and kissing them both. Neither Grizz nor Eben resisted. I walked over and greeted them. "About time," I said. "What took you so long?"
"Stubborn physician," Grizz grumbled.
"He got lost," Eben explained. Grizz cuffed him on the back of the head, then grinned sheepishly.
"He might be right."
"Dragones," I said, and embraced them both too, clapping their backs. I stepped back, and Leah pelted them with questions. They were only two more soldiers, but to have them by her side meant everything to her. A small crowd milled around, their curiosity piqued by the commotion, and probably the sight of a scarred giant like Grizz and his well-armed sidekick. Pauline walked over and stood beside me, eyeing them with interest. "Are they the soldiers I saw you with back in Terravin?" she asked. "Yes, but they're more than just soldiers. They're family, too," I said. "My family. Blood kin of another kind." She brushed up close, her shoulder touching mine. "I want to meet them."
Chapter 86, Rafe.
The rest of us filed out of the tent, too. They all watched Leah embracing Grizz and then Eben. I saw the joy on her face. She spoke Vendin with them, reverting to it as naturally as if it were her own language. I was glad to see them, too, but not in the same way Leah was. Grizz was a formidable foe. With every day that passed with no sign of my requested troops, I was reminded that we needed every soldier we could get. "Why did he call her Queen?" Howland asked. I looked at Leah. She wore a jacket made in the Marassi style, the red scraps of her wedding dress slashing over her shoulder and across the front. The kavah was exposed. Bones swung from her hip. "Everyone needs hope, Rafe. I have to give it to them." "It's just a Vendin custom," Tavish told him. He looked at me and shrugged. "Yes, only a custom," I agreed. If Leah wanted to explain further, it was up to her. I turned to go back in the tent, then stopped mid-step when I spotted Jeb walking toward me, then Orin. They both grinned, and then I saw the general. "Draeger," I said.
"That's right, Your Majesty. Your troops are here, as you ordered."
I studied him, still wary. "All of the troops?" He nodded.
"All, with a load of ballistas and everything else you asked for."
The camp was silent, dark except for a few torches lit between tents. Sleep would be difficult tonight. Tensions were high, but rest was ordered, necessary. I walked to the valley entrance where the torchlight didn't reach. Only the moon weaving between fingers of clouds lit the meadow grass. Leah leaned against the rocky wall, staring into the valley. "Company?" I asked. She nodded. We stood there, looking into the quiet. We had already said everything there was to say, done everything we could do. Dalbrick's troops were in place. Our odds were better. Venda outnumbered us only 2-1 now. But they still had better weapons. Something deep inside me wanted to drag Leah away, keep her safe. But I knew I couldn't. "We're as ready as we can be," I said. She nodded again. "I know." Her gaze traveled along the silhouette of ruins on the cliffs, their ghostly edges lined by silver moonlight. "They were great once," she said. "They flew among the stars. Their voices boomed over the mountains. And this is all that's left. Will we ever truly know who they were, Rafe?" She turned toward me. "After tomorrow, will anyone know who we were?" I looked at her, not caring who the ancients were. All I could think was, it doesn't matter how many universes come and go, I will always remember who we were together. I leaned down, kissed her, slowly, gently, one last time. She looked at me. She said nothing. She didn't need to. The meadow grass rippled in the breeze. By the next day it would be trampled, burned, bloody. Our scouts had ridden in tonight. The Komazar's army would make it to the valley entrance by morning.
The crowned and beaten, the tongue and sword, together they will attack, like blinding stars thrown from the heavens. Song of Venda. Chapter 87, Leah.
Nurse the rage. My heart pounded wildly. The army was a blur at the end of the valley, a solid rolling wave, condensing, rising, solidifying as the valley narrowed. Their pace was leisurely, unworried. They had no need for worry, I'd already seen them approaching from the cliffs at the entrance to the valley before I rode back to take my position. I had seen how far they stretched, how unstoppable they were. Even the trail they left behind them was staggering, like the dust of a star shooting across the sky. It reached back for miles. They marched in 10 divisions, infantry at the lead, followed by what looked like supplies, artillery, and herds of Brezelots. More infantry followed, and then a 5th division of soldiers on horseback. There was a heaviness to this division, something thick and weighty and more foreboding than the rest. There was no doubt in my mind that was where he rode, in the middle, within quick reach of all divisions, keeping a close watch on his creation, sucking in its power and breathing it out again like fire. The army's slow pace wore on nerves, just as he'd calculated. A squad of their scouts had spotted us, then raced back to their front lines, probably reporting our pathetic numbers. 5,000 of us defended the exit of the valley. 5,000 that they could see. More were ready to stream in behind us. The Venden pace continued syrup slow, unflustered. We were merely a stone in the trail to be trampled underfoot. Even if the whole Morrigi's army blocked the exit, the Komazar wasn't worried. If anything, we only whet his appetite. At last he was getting the first course of the feast he had anticipated for so long. Morrigan. I heard the name of the kingdom on his lips, amused, sticky and cloying like a jelly drop in his mouth. He swallowed it down like a treat. If rage pulsed in my veins, it was masked by the fear that roared in my ears for the thousands who stood behind me. This might be the day they lost their lives. Rafe and Caden sat on horses on either side of me. While I dressed to be recognized, their clothing served an opposite purpose. Both wore black cloaks with the hoods drawn, the uniform of Morrigi's guardians. Jeb, Tavish, Oren, Andreas, and Grizz were in a line behind us, wearing the same. We didn't want them recognized too soon. "He's playing with us," Rafe said, his eyes locked on the slowly progressing cloud. Caden cursed under his breath. "At this pace, we'll be fighting by moonlight." We couldn't rush forward. We needed them to come to us. "It's just past midday," I said, trying to calm myself as much as him. "We have hours of daylight yet." And then a horse broke free from their front lines. A distant speck at first, but then charging, fast. I heard the ratchet of the ballistas as it stormed toward us. But something about its coloring was wrong. "Wait," I said. It wasn't a Brezelot. And there was a rider. As it drew near, I knew. It was the Komazar. He stopped 100 yards off. He held his hands up to show he wasn't armed. "What the hell is he doing?" Rafe asked. "I request a parley with the princess," he called. "Alone." A parley? Had he gone mad? But then I thought, no, he is deadly sane. "And I bring a gift of goodwill," he called again. "All I ask for is a moment to talk, without weapons." Both Rafe and Caden balked, but then the Komazar reached behind his back and swung a child down to the ground. It was Yvette. My heart stopped. The grass swallowed her up to her waist. I remembered the day I had seen her huddled in the market with Aster and Zakiah, clutching a bloody cloth after her fingertip had been cut off. She looked even smaller and more terrified now. The Komazar dismounted. "All yours," he called, "just for the price of a few minutes." Rafe and Caden railed against it, but I was already unbuckling and handing them my sword and knives. Our archers can take him down, and we can have the child, too, Rafe argued. No, I answered. Nothing was ever that simple with the Komazar. We knew each other too well, and this was a very clear message to me. And when do I get Sakaya? I called back to him. He smiled. When I've returned safely to my lines, I will send him. And if I don't make it back... He shrugged. He was enjoying this. It was a game. Theater. He wanted to draw it out, squeeze all the game pieces a little tighter in his fist. I knew Rafe and Caden were both a heartbeat away from signaling the archers. The sacrifice of one child for the beast himself. A child who could die anyway. A child who would likely die anyway. And our prize was in our grasp. But it was a choice that came with a price, one the Komazar had already calculated. The air was taut with the decision. He stood there, unafraid, knowing, and I hated him more deeply. How much was I like him? Who was I willing to sacrifice to get what I wanted? The Komazar's fate will come later, I whispered. Do not lay a hand on the beast yet. I rode out to meet him, but when I was still 10 yards away, I dismounted and waved Yvette forward. Her wide, frightened eyes turned to the Komazar. He nodded, and she walked toward me. I knelt when she reached me and held her tiny hands. Yvette, do you see those two horses far behind me with the cloaked soldiers? She looked past me at the thousands of troops, her lip trembling, but then spotted the two dark-cloaked ones. She nodded. Good. They will take care of you. I want you to go to them now. I want you to run and not look back. No matter what you see or hear, you will keep going. Do you understand? Her eyes brimmed with tears. Go, I said. Now. She ran, stumbling through the grass. The distance seemed like miles, and when she reached them, Caden scooped her up and handed her off to another soldier. My stomach jumped to my throat. I swallowed, forcing the bile down. She made it, I told myself. I wrenched my breaths to a slow rhythm and turned back to face the Komazar.
See, he said, I keep my word.
He waved me forward.
Let's talk.
I walked to meet him, looking for lumps, bulges in his clothing, a knife waiting to pay me back. As I drew closer, I saw the lines in his face, the sharpness of his cheekbones, the toll my attack had taken on him. But I also saw the hunger burning in his eyes. I stopped in front of him. His gaze rolled leisurely over me.
You wanted to talk?
He smiled.
Has it come to this, Jezalia? No niceties?
His hand reached up as if to caress my face. Don't touch me, I warned, or I will kill you. His hand returned to his side, but his smile remained chiseled on his lips.
I admire you, princess. You almost did what no one else was able to do in the 11 years of my rule. That is a record, did you know? No other Komazar has ever ruled that long.
A pity it's about to come to an end. He sighed dramatically.
How you still hang on to things. I care about you, Jezalia. Truly, I do. But this...
He waved his hand toward the troops behind me as if they were too pitiful to consider.
You don't have to die. Come over to my side. Look at all I have to offer.
Servitude? Cruelty? Violence? You tempt me so, Sher Komazar. We've talked. You can go back now. He looked past me at the troops.
Is that the prince back there? With his 100 men who stormed the citadel.
His tone was thick with mockery. So the vice-regent has come running to you with his tail tucked between his legs.
I smiled when he told me what you'd done. I was impressed that you rooted out my moles. How is your father?
Dead. He deserved no truths from me, and the weaker he thought we were, the better.
And your brothers?
Dead. He sighed.
This is all too easy.
You haven't asked me about Caden, I said. His smile disappeared, and his expression darkened. I knew him well, too. Caden was a blow he couldn't hide. There was something in this world he had loved, after all. Something he had saved, nurtured. But it had turned on him. Something that pointed to his own failure. A small rush of pebbles suddenly streamed down from the cliffs above. He looked up, surveying the empty ruins, turning to look at the other side. The silence of held breaths gripped the valley. He looked back at me and grinned.
You thought I didn't know?
Ice filled my belly. He turned as if to leave, but then stepped closer to me instead.
It's the girl on the terrace that's bothering you, isn't it? I admit I went a bit too far. Caught up in the moment, I suppose. Would an apology change your mind?
Caught up in the moment? I stared at him. There were no words. No words. He leaned down and kissed my cheek.
I suppose not.
He turned and walked back to his horse. The rage came, blinding, bright, consuming.
Send Zakiya, I yelled.
I will, princess. I always keep my word.
Caden.
I handed Yvette to a soldier. She choked on sobs, but there was no time to comfort her. Take her to Natia, I said. Leah had set up a camp outside the valley for whatever children we could capture. Gwyneth, Pauline, and more soldiers were there. Natia spoke the language and would reassure them that they wouldn't be harmed and hopefully help comfort them, assuming we were able to get any more of them out of the valley alive. I got back on my horse, watching Leah step closer to the Komazar. It was madness. I surveyed the cliffs, watched the wall of the army poised to attack. Watched and waited and knew this was not just a parley. It was tearing nerves loose. The slow draw of a knife over skin. A stalking howl in a forest. The horses stamped, knowing, nervous. Shh, I whispered. Make them suffer. This was the Komazar, doing what he did best.
Rafe.
I finally breathed as the Komazar rode away and Leah got back on her horse. Zakiya was delivered as promised, whole and alive. He was rushed out of the valley to wait with Yvette. I had been expecting the worst, pieces perhaps, as the Komazar liked to threaten, but he always knew how to turn the moment, to plant doubt. Leah had warned me he knew there were troops up in the ruins, and I sent soldiers to alert them. He may have known they were there, but he didn't know exactly where they would charge from, or how many of them there were. It was a long valley, and when the vice-regent had escaped, he only knew of me and my 100 men, not about the whole Dalbrek army. The cloud rolled toward us again, but this time with ravenous hunger. I felt the thunder of its feet, both human and animal, but united as one raging beast. I sensed our troops tensing, ready to spring. I stretched out my left arm, a signal to hold. Hold. You're sure he'll send them first? I asked Leah. With the high hills around us, dusk was already closing in. Leah's knuckles whitened. One hand clenched her reins, and the other, her hilt. Yes, him using Yvette and Zakiya is proof, He knows me. He knows what will unsettle our soldiers and make them hesitate. We are not like him. We watched them get closer, and their features came into view at last. Lines of soldiers, 10 deep, 100 across. None of them older than Eben or Natia. Most much younger. They held halberds, swords, axes, and knives. As they advanced, I saw their faces, wild, barely recognizable as children anymore. I signaled the shield guard to move forward, into position. "Shields up!" I ordered. Their shields interlocked with practiced precision. "Archers forward!" Orin called. And then the first of the Brezalots charged.
Leah.
The prodded animal streaked past their front lines, heading toward the shield guard. The ballistas tucked above us moved to the ridges, ratcheted, cocked, and ready. I watched them turn, aiming. Tavish waited with distressing patience and finally signaled the two with the best angles.
Fire!
The iron spears flew. One missed, but the other was a perfect shot, spearing the animal in its shoulder. The Brezalot stumbled, fell, and then the earth exploded a safe distance away, meadow, horse, and blood raining down, the pieces still on fire. The smell of burnt flesh filled the air. And then another Brezalot came. And another. The second was downed, but the third was only grazed by the iron spear and charged into the shield guard. There was a scramble to get away, but it was too late. It exploded, leaving a gaping hole surrounded by dead bodies and pieces of beast. Orin and his archers were knocked to the ground by the blast. Wraith and infantry rushed forward to help them, and the Komazar used the resulting chaos to send his brigade of child soldiers forward to further demoralize us.
"Retreat!"
I yelled, loud and frantic, so even the Komazar would hear. "Retreat!" Our lines hobbled back, the guard holding their shields in disarray, but the infantry behind us moved into position. Ready. I watched, breathless, waiting, drawing on patience I didn't know I had. The shield guard staggered back. The child soldiers bore down on them, charging down the middle of the valley toward us.
"Retreat!"
I shouted again. The Vendan troops behind the children stalled, waiting for their young soldiers to add to our chaos before they moved in with their heavy weapons. I watched, my heart hammering, and then when the last of the children crossed a designated line, I yelled,
"Now!"
Dirt soared into the air. Chunks of meadow and grass flew as rows of sharp-angled pikes sprang from beneath the valley floor. Two impassable rows crossed the width of the valley, trapping the children on our side. The children turned, stunned by the noise, and then nets were launched, falling on them, ensnaring them further. The infantry rushed forward to subdue them and then guide them out of the valley to where Natia, Pauline, and Gwyneth waited with more soldiers. I raced forward, stopping at the wall of pikes. I knew I had only seconds before another Brezalot was ready to break through our wall, or another of their heinous weapons was launched.
Caden.
8 Vendans rode with us, the ones we trusted, who had revealed themselves back at the Citadel. This was the part I knew Rafe objected to, or maybe feared, but he rode forward on one side of Leah, and I on the other, watching for archers or others in range to take Leah down. There was calamity on the other side of the pikes, a ripple of disturbance behind their front lines, orders rolling back. "Brothers! Sisters!" Leah called, drawing their attention back to her. More word rippled back. There were Vendans at her side, including Grizz and myself. It triggered a strained silence. She made a plea for surrender, settlement, a promise for peace, but she hadn't even finished her proposal when the Komazar, Chievdar Tyrek, and Governor Janos pushed through on their horses. The Komazar's eyes fell briefly on me, the fire of my betrayal still blazing in them, and then his attention turned to a soldier who had stepped forward and lowered his weapon, listening to Leah. The Komazar swung his sword, and the man was halved. The front-line soldiers raised their weapons, gripped in fists, hot with fervor again to avoid the same fate. And then a herd of Brezalots charged toward us.
Rafe.
I was thrown from my horse. Splinters of wood rained down on me. A horn sounded, reverberating through the valley. I rolled to my feet, my sword drawn and shield raised. The battalions were launched. On the cliffs in the distance, I saw forces led by Draeger charging down a trail. On the opposite side, Marquez's men did the same in an effort to divide the Vendin forces in two. Tavish fought at my back, the loud ring of steel coiling around us, both of us swinging, lunging, and cutting down the wall of Vendins coming at us. We finally made it back to our horses and killed Vendins who were about to claim them. From atop my horse, I searched through the bedlam of brown and gray and flashing metal for a glimpse of Leah. She was gone. We fought our way to band with other ranks, then plowed through enemy lines and headed toward the 5th Division.
Leah.
I scrambled to my feet, a knot of soldiers at my side. Thick dust filled the air. I'd lost sight of both Rafe and Caden. Vendin swarmed in past the shattered pikes. I heard the burbling gasps of soldiers impaled with splintered wood. Darkness was creeping in, but the cliffs ignited with a line of fire, and stones were catapulted to scatter Vendin forces as Dalbrecht's battalion swarmed to the valley floor. Jeb made it to my side. "This way," he said, and with a Dalbrecht platoon, we pounded our way through Vendin lines. The screams of battle filled the air, echoing mercilessly between the valley walls. I heard the wheeze, the coughs, the thud of death sounding over and over again. The Komazar had been quick to silence my voice before it reached even a small number of Vendins, but now, with the youngest Vendin soldiers safely out of his reach, I knew where I had to go, where more would hear me. Faces became a blur as we advanced, my shield raised, my sword swinging, Jeb watching my back and I his. My shield took a powerful blow, and I was knocked to the ground. I rolled before an axe hit the ground where my head had been, then thrust my sword into a soft gut as the soldier came at me again. I jumped to my feet, spinning, my shield lifting to deflect another attack, and then, in the swirl of metal and shadow, my eye caught something. Something bobbled and blue.
Caden.
The Vendin troops scrambled under the assault of stones raining down on them. The attack launched from the cliffs was only a distraction until the battalions could reach the valley floor. My leg ran with blood, a piece of wood piercing my thigh like a bayonet. I couldn't pull it out, so I broke it off, even as I stabbed my sword into a charging Vendin, one I had known. And then I killed another, and another. Grizz fought his way toward me. Leah had been only feet from us, and now she was gone. We charged deeper into the Vendin ranks. Minutes seemed like hours, our progress slow, a stream of Dalbrecht and Moragee soldiers fighting at our sides. And then an explosion rocked the valley.
Rafe.
A fiery plume shot into the sky, lighting the valley with sparks and flames. Fire rained down, thousands of glowing embers lighting on men and animals alike, horses rearing back in fear, soldiers screaming as they were lit on fire. I ran to one soldier, pushing him to the ground and rolling him to douse the flame, and then I saw Tavish. He beat at flames that streamed up his arm, lighting his hair. I tackled him, using my gloved hands to smother the flames. He screamed in agony even after the fire was out. I leaned close, trying to calm him. "You'll be all right, brother," I said. "I promise you'll be all right." He moaned with pain, and I ordered another soldier to take him back behind our lines, then helped lift him onto a horse. The soldier left with Tavish. And that was when I felt my palms burning, already blistering from dousing the flames. I ripped off my gloves. They were saturated with the fiery substance that had rained down. I knelt, pressing my hands against the cool grass, and then I saw another soldier lying on the ground beside me. It was the vice-regent's son, Andreas. Caden's brother was dead. I had time only to close his blank, staring eyes. I rode toward Draeger's battalion, watching Vendens fall by the tens and hundreds, but no matter how many we felled, there were always more to replace them. When I got to our battalions, Draeger and Marquez had successfully fragmented the 5th Division, but were already losing ground. I saw Caden making his way to me. Leah wasn't with him, and my heart stopped. Where was she? "I lost her," he said when he reached me. "She's not with you?" A Vendin as big as Grizz came at us, swinging a mace in one hand and an axe in the other. He pummeled our shields, pushing us farther and farther back until Caden and I sidestepped at the same time and came from behind, both of our swords piercing his ribs. He fell like a tree, shaking the ground, and then behind him in the distance, we both spotted the vice-regent.
Leah.
The terror, the blood. It was a wave crashing over us again and again, coming at us from all sides. Every time a battalion gained ground, more Brezelots were prodded forward, more arrows launched, more iron bolts whirred through the air, piercing shields and flesh, more burning discs were hurled that clung to skin and seared lungs. The noise was deafening, roaring through the valley like a relentless storm. Fire and smoke rose, stinging ash fell. I lost my bearings, the bluff no longer in sight. Only moment by moment survival mattered. Swinging, stabbing, refusing to let him win. It is not over. Jeb was vicious in his attacks, as determined as I was to break through their next wave of lines. But we made no headway. Our forces thinning with every new barrage of weapons. I saw glimpses of a heavily armed battalion ahead, horsemen battling above the heads of the infantry. There was no time to search for Rafe or Caden among them, but I knew that was where they had been headed. The familiar, pained squeal of a Brezelot screamed through the air. I knew what that meant. Another one had been loaded with explosives and prodded forward. I heard the fearsome thud of its hooves, the hiss of its raging breaths growing louder as it thundered toward us. The sounds echoed, multiplied, surrounded us. I turned, unsure where it would appear, and then a rough hand shoved me, throwing me back. It was Rafe. We tumbled to the ground, even as the world exploded.
Caden.
You can't do it. His breathing was labored, his words short, still trying to convince me. I saw the terror in his eyes. I was stronger. I was quicker. I was driven by 11 years of anger. Metal met metal. Our strikes vibrated between us. You can't do it. I'm your father. He thrust, his blade grazing my arm. Blood trickled through my shirt and his eyes lit with hunger. He glanced down at my leg, still impaled with the wood spike. I saw the calculation in his eyes. How much strength did I have left? I wasn't sure myself. The pain was getting harder to ignore. The stream of blood was sticky in my boot. I drove him back, the clang of steel chattering in the air. "I'm your father," he said again. "When?" I asked. "When were you ever my father?" His pupils were pinpoints, his nostrils flared. There was no scent of jasmine on him now, only the scent of fear. My blade pressed against his, holding, pushing, a lifetime of lies pulsing between us. He pushed off and retreated back several paces. "I've tried to make amends with you," he hissed. "You can't do it. Son, let's start over. There's still time for us." I relaxed my grip on my sword, lowered my guard, stared at him. Time? Now? His eyes glimmered, and he advanced, as I'd known he would, his swing fierce, knocking the sword from my hand. He smiled, ready to plunge his blade into me, but as he stepped forward, I stepped faster, and standing chest to chest, I thrust my knife upward into his gut. His eyes widened. "Your time is up," I whispered. "Father." And I let him fall to my feet.
Rafe.
I lay over her, protecting her as metal, wood, and fire streamed down around us. "Rafe," she whispered. A split second of relief raced between us before the battle closed in again. We got to our feet, grabbing our shields and weapons from the ground. A cloud of smoke filled the air, and dazed Venden staggered toward us, the blast disorienting them as much as the enemy. "I have to get to the bluff, Rafe. I have to speak to them before we're all dead." We ran in the shadows of the cliffs. I spotted the bluff ahead, but then Governor Janos closed in. The watch captain, chancellor, and a squad of 5 soldiers stood behind him. Janos stepped forward. "Give her over." "So you can put her head on a spike?" I answered. "That's up to the Komisar." My fist tightened on my shield. I felt the blisters on my palms bursting, liquid oozing between my fingers. "The bluff is right behind us, Leah. Go." I desperately prayed that for once she wouldn't argue with me. I heard her run. The Chancellor smiled.
"The bluff's a dead end. There's nowhere for her to go. You just cornered our rabbit for us."
"Only if you can get past me," I raised my sword. "Past us," Draeger said, and stepped up beside me. Jeb was with him.
Leah.
I ran toward the bluff, my lungs burning with smoke. I heard the desperation in Rafe's command. "Go!" Too many were dying. Everyone was losing, except the Komisar. The valley still roared with battle. How would they hear me? Sweat poured down my forehead, my eyes stinging, and I struggled to see the path ahead. But then the blue flashed again. A bauble. An unseeing eye. I choked on the acrid air, trying to see through the smoke. And then Calantha stepped out of the murky haze and blocked my path. She was dressed as I'd never seen her before. She was no longer the mistress of the sanctum. She was a fierce warrior with sabers and knives sheathed at her sides. One of the knives was mine. The glittering jewels reflected the burning fires. Her knuckles were tight knots, gripped on sabers she was ready to use. I slowly drew my sword. "Move aside, Calantha," I said, waiting for her to spring. "I don't want to hurt you." "I'm not here to stop you, Princess. I'm here to tell you to hurry. Speak to them before none are left to know the truth of this day. They are not hungry for this. They hunger for another kind of hope." A quarter-lord charged through a veil of smoke, an axe in his hand, poised to bury it in me, but Calantha lunged, slicing his belly wide, and his body tumbled, thudding into the base of the cliff. She looked at me, repeating Rafe's plea, "Go!" and then turned to take down another of her own.
Rafe.
I had fought by Jeb's side before, but not Draeger's. He knew instinctively which were the strongest fighters. We fought back to back. I kept the Chancellor in view as I smashed one soldier's face with my shield and sliced the calf of another to the bone. The watch captain hung back behind them all. Draeger's blows drove Janos back, and the governor fell. Draeger ran him through, then spun to block the blows of another soldier. The Chancellor bore down. The jolt of his sword hitting my shield cracked the air, but I deflected the force and it glanced into the skull of a soldier at his side. He fell as Jeb thrust his sword into a soldier beside him. Now it was one-on-one, except for the watch captain, who still cowered behind the others. My hands burned on my sword, slipped with the wet blisters, but I gripped harder. Meeting the Chancellor blow for blow, our swords crossed, pressing, our chests heaving. "It was you," I said. He pushed away and swung. Our swords chattered.
"I only killed the old one," he said, not even knowing Sven's name. His face glistened with sweat. "The watch captain and vice-regent got the rest."
"Sven's not dead," I told him. Steel rang and sparks flew between us.
"Do you think I care?"
he said between heavy breaths. My sword rammed his shield, the metal crumpling under the blows.
"Not any more than you care about impaling a princess or betraying your kingdom."
I pressed forward, not giving him a chance to attack. His arm weakened under the barrage, and finally his shield fell. I thrust my sword forward. The blade slid through his ribs, my hand meeting his gut, my face inches from his.
"I don't expect you to care, Lord Chancellor. I just expect you to die."
Leah.
I ran, coughing and stumbling through dark ruts. Night had closed in, but the valley glowed with pockets of light, the fires burning ridges, meadow, and bodies. Smoke hung in clouds, bitter and sharp, woven with the smell of burnt flesh. The clang of metal still reverberated from the valley walls. The cries of the fallen stabbed the air, and the animals caught up in the devastation keened with misery. I wiped my stinging eyes, searching, falling embers burning my skin as I tried to find the trail to the bluff, hopelessness sweeping over me. "Don't tarry, miss, or they will all die." I choked and stumbled forward. A finger of clear air opened, and I saw the trail. I ran, tumbling and clawing my way to the top. I made it to the bluff's rim, and my soul tore in two. In both directions, the valley burned. The weapons boomed. The glint of metal flashed. The bodies writhed en masse, like a nest of dying snakes.
"Brothers! Sisters!" I called.
But my words were lost in the roar of a valley that stretched too far and thundered too loud. They couldn't hear me. Trust. It was impossible. I was desperate and cried out again, but the battle raged on. Trust the strength within you. I lifted my hands and raised my voice to the heavens, reaching not just for the strength within me, but the strength of generations. I felt something reaching back to me, and then what I heard wasn't my voice alone, but a thousand voices. They wove through me, around me, the world breathing us in, remembering, time circling. Morrigan stood at my side, Venda and Godrell on the other. Pauline, Gwyneth, and Birdie stood behind me, and 100 more. Our voices braided together, a steel reaching to the ends of the valley, swirling, sharing. Heads turned, listening, knowing, some swaths cutting deeper than others. The smoke coiled, thinned. And then the battle stilled.
"Brothers! Sisters! Lay down your arms. I am your queen, daughter of your blood and sister of your heart. I will stand by you. I will return to Venda."
I told them there was another kind of hope, the one Venda had promised. I begged them to listen to their hearts, to trust a knowing as old as the universe.
"The strength is within us. We will settle the Camlanto, build new lives. With my last dying breath, I promise you, we will make it happen together. But this is not the way. We can prevail against the dragon who steals our dreams. Lay down your arms, and we will create a hope that lasts."
A universe stilled. The heavens watched. The breath of the centuries held. The pause of battle stretched. And then a sword was thrown down. And another. And while the Chievdars, governors, and quarterlords still raged, not open to the hearing, the clans laid down their weapons in waves.
I couldn't have asked for a better place to find you, my pet. Where they all can watch.
I whirled. It was the Komazar.
Now they'll all know with certainty who the Komazar of Venda really is, he said.
I drew my sword and stepped back. They're listening to me, Komazar. This is what they want. It is too late for you. He lifted his heavy sword with both hands. I knew that stance. I knew what would come next.
They want whatever I want, he said. And I want you dead. It's as simple as that, princess. That is what real power is.
He looked at the sword in my hand and smiled, its reach far shorter than his. He stepped closer, his face gleaming with lust for the power at his fingertips. I stepped back and felt the bluff's rim crumbling beneath my feet, heard the loose stones tumbling to the valley floor. My heart seized in a fist, and I saw the hunger in his eyes. More. The battle and my fear fed him. But then I saw something else. A flash of color. A jeweled blue eye.
Regineus!
The Komazar's expression went cold, hearing his birth name said aloud, and then rage engulfed him. He spun and faced Calantha. Grief shimmered in her lone pale eye, and maybe loyalty, love, and a thousand other things I couldn't name.
We have a long history, she had once told me.
Maybe that was what I saw in her gaze, the memories of all he had been to her, and all that he was now.
You gave me hope once, she said. But I cannot let you do this. It is time for another kind of hope.
A dismissive huff of air had barely passed his lips when she charged toward him. He lifted his sword in a sharp move, and it impaled her long before she ever reached him. But her momentum had unexpected power, the sword running her through, and her body slammed into his. He stumbled back, one step, then another, then panic flashed across his face as he scrambled for footing. But it was too late. I leapt to the side as both of their bodies flew past me and tumbled over the edge, his scream echoing as they fell to the valley floor. But as I lunged, I felt myself sliding too, the ground giving way beneath me. I frantically grasped for anything, grass, branches, but it was all out of my reach, earth sliding around me, and I was falling with them. And then I felt a hand lock onto mine.
Chapter 88, Pauline. The battle may have ended, but it still raged on in dreams. It took a regiment of soldiers, along with Gwyneth, Bertie, Eben, Natia, and me, to contain the child soldiers who were ushered out of the valley, and to comfort them in the following days. Even from the camp, we heard the explosions, the terror, the screams reverberating through the valley. Just before it ended, I fell to my knees in desperation, reaching out to Leah, praying for her safety and strength, praying her voice would be heard by the Vendans. Natia, who was only a child herself, spoke to the children with words that were familiar to them, and it seemed at times that was all that quieted them and got us through the night. The next day the children still trembled with fright, struck out, recoiled at our touch. It was hard to gain their trust. I understood too well that trust couldn't be forced or gained overnight.
but I also knew it could come with patience, slowly.